Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Monks, this is the only way. For the purification of beings, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the destruction of suffering and grief, for reaching the right path, for the attainment of nirvana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. Good evening, everyone. Hello, everyone on Zoom. Tonight, we will examine the four foundations of mindfulness and how we can apply them in our practice and in our daily lives. The Buddha's instruction for the practice of mindfulness are found in the Satipatthana Sutta, which has been described as the most important discourse ever given by the Buddha for mental development. Satipatthana can be translated from the Pali language as the establishment or presence of mindfulness, or alternatively, the foundations of mindfulness. The sutta contains many Pali words, but we will stick to the English translation of those words since I'd have a lot of trouble pronouncing the Pali words. The foundations refer to the four areas of life to which mindful awareness needs to be applied: body, feelings, mind, and objects of mind. Within each of these foundations is a set of instructions for each contemplation. The text tells us that we should dwell ardently, or with wholehearted energy, clearly comprehending and mindful, having put away longing and dejection concerning the world. After each instruction, the sutta includes a refrain instructing the practitioner to observe each aspect of the experience as impermanent, or to simply be aware of it to the extent necessary for knowledge and mindfulness. The refrain ends with the directive to live detached or meditate independently, not clinging to or grasping at anything in the world. The text on mindfulness of the body provides a list of six exercises, the first of which is mindful breathing. The Buddha referred to mindful breathing as an unadulterated, blissful abiding that banishes unwholesome thoughts as soon as they arise. He instructs us to retreat to a forest, the root of a tree, or for more practical purposes, a solitary or quiet place, and sit cross-legged or in an erect posture and to remain alert. We then turn our attention to our breath. We become aware when we are breathing in and when we are breathing out. He instructs us to observe how long our inhalations and exhalations are. We do not try to control the breath. We simply recognize if our in-breaths and our out-breaths are long or short. Next, he instructs us to become aware of our bodies through our breath. I found this commentary from Thich Nhat Hanh on the subject to be helpful to me in understanding the Buddha's instructions. He says, when you begin to practice mindful breathing, don't consider your in-breath as something outside of your mind. Experiencing my in-breath, I breathe in. Experiencing my out-breath, I breathe out. You become one with your in-breath and one with your out-breath. You don't stand outside. So during the time of breathing in, you don't stay as an outside observer to observe your in-breath. No, you don't recognize this is my in-breath and this is me observing my in-breath. That's not correct. You have to be one, experiencing my in-breath, I breathe in, experiencing my out-breath, I breathe out. And when you come to the body, you do the same, experiencing my body, I breathe in. So you become your body. Mindfulness of the postures of the body is the next exercise, where mindfulness is extended to all postures, walking, standing, sitting, and lying down, and to the change from one posture to the next. When we are walking, we know that we are walking, and so forth for each posture. Bhikkhu Bodhi, in his commentary on the foundations, states that the contemplation of postures illuminates the impersonal nature of the body, revealing it to be a configuration of living matter subject to the directing influence of volition. The next exercise is mindfulness with clear comprehension. We are to be aware of exactly what we are doing and why we are doing it when performing the activities of daily life, such as going forward and back, looking straight or looking away, getting dressed, eating, drinking, using the toilet, falling asleep, waking up, speaking, remaining quiet. By following this instruction, our practice is realized in the activities of our everyday lives. Reflection on the repulsiveness of the body comes next. The contemplation of the body's unattractiveness is the Buddha's cure for sensual lust. When we mentally dissect our bodies, we realize its unappealing nature. The Buddha instructs us to reflect on 32 bodily parts, to include hair, nails, teeth, blood, sweat, fat, tears, mucus, etc. When visualizing these parts individually, the overall attractiveness of the human body dissolves and sensual desires fade away. Next is reflection on the material elements of the body. Again, the impersonal nature of the body is realized. The Buddha states that the human body contains elements of earth, which represents stability and solidity, and the physical structure of the body, like the bones and muscles. Water, which represents fluidity, adaptability, and bodily fluids like blood, tears, lymph. Fire, which represents energy, warmth, and bodily functions like digestion and metabolism. Air, which represents movement, breath, and the life force that animates the body. By understanding the body as composed of these elements, we are reminded that the physical form is impermanent and subject to change, like the changing seasons. The 9 cemetery contemplations are the last set of instructions. The Buddha instructed the monks to go to the charnel grounds to observe and meditate on the 9 stages of the decomposition of a dead body. You know, as finding a charnel ground and sitting there is not practical, you know, for most of us, this can be practiced imaginatively or with the aid of pictures. After obtaining a clear mental image of the decaying body, the process of decay is mentally applied to one's own body by reflecting, "Verily, also my body is of the same nature. Such it will become and will not escape it." This exercise teaches us not to cling to the body and to realize the impermanence of our physical form. The second foundation is the contemplation of feeling, where we observe the qualities of our feelings as pleasant, painful, or unpleasant, or neutral. Feeling does not refer to emotions. Here, the word feeling refers to the tone of the experience in the context of being pleasant, painful, or neutral. Bhikkhu Bodhi's commentary on this contemplation explains that pleasant feelings nourish greed and attachment. Painful feelings elicit aversion, and neutral feelings bring forth delusion. The delusion is the false belief that things remain static and are permanent. This causes apathy and inaction when action may be needed. This is because we typically respond less to something which is neutral. A pleasant feeling may be drinking hot tea on a freezing day or cold tea on a warm day. On the other hand, drinking hot tea on a warm day and cold tea on a freezing day may be unpleasant. Drinking room temperature tea can produce a neutral feeling. So drinking tea can, you know, feel different depending on the context or situation. It's important that we do not insert ego into our observation of feeling by saying, "I feel pain" or "I feel happy." We simply observe the feeling with bare attention and without judgment. By viewing the feeling as an impersonal factor of experience, it does not lead to the unwholesome states of greed, attachment, aversion, or delusion. As our practice progresses, the Buddha then directs us to distinguish whether the pleasant, painful, or neutral feeling is worldly, in other words, material or physiological, or if the feelings are unworldly, or spiritual. So an example of a worldly feeling would be the pleasure you may get from having a good meal, or an unpleasant feeling, back pain from sitting during meditation. Unworldly feelings arise in the pursuit of spiritual liberation. A pleasant spiritual feeling could be peace from letting go of worldly feelings, and a painful spiritual feeling could be frustration with your practice. Worldly feelings tend to lead to attachment, whereas spiritual feelings tend to lead to detachment. Through practice, we realize that feelings arise and dissolve continuously. And this deepens our experience of impermanence, which dissolves greed for pleasant feelings, aversion for painful feelings, and the delusion of neutral feelings, of thinking that feelings are permanent. When we become attuned to the arising of feelings, we begin to experience equanimity. So the third foundation is contemplation of the mind or consciousness. In other words, this is the observation of states of mind. The Buddha mentions 16 mental states grouped in 8 pairs: the mind with lust and without, with aversion and without aversion, with delusion and without delusion, the cramped mind and the scattered mind, the developed mind and the undeveloped mind, the surpassable mind and the unsurpassable mind, the concentrated mind and the unconcentrated mind, and the freed mind and the bound mind. And for practical purposes, it's sufficient to note the presence or absence of the 3 poisons: greed or attachment, anger or hate, and ignorance or delusion. When a particular state of mind is present, it is noted merely as a state of mind. Again, we do not apply I or mine. Whether the state of mind is wholesome or unwholesome, we do not experience elation or dejection. We just clearly identify the state. These states of mind can include joy, grief, anger, fear, etc. Being aware of these energies can allow us to see the causes of these emotions and allow us to free ourselves from them. As our practice progresses and we work with these energies, the mind becomes more solid and stable, or as the Buddha says, more developed and concentrated. The fourth foundation is the contemplation of dhammas. And dhammas with a small d refers to phenomena or mental objects, which are the 5 hindrances, the 5 aggregates or skandhas, the 6 pairs of base senses, the 7 factors of enlightenment, and last but not least, the 4 noble truths. The important thing to remember about mental objects is that the basic characteristic of all dhammas is interdependent origination. Thich Nhat Hanh says in his book, Transformation and Healing, no single Dhamma can arise by itself, endure by itself, and fade away by itself. The coming to be of one Dhamma is dependent on the coming to be, endurance, and destruction of all other Dhammas. Through careful discriminative investigation, we will be able to see interdependent nature of all Dhammas and realize their essential birthlessness and deathlessness, and so transcend the fear of birth and death. The 5 hindrances, they constitute the obstacles to realization. We are instructed by the Sutta to note the presence of the hindrances, discern how they arise and how they can be removed, and how they can be prevented from arising in the future. The first hindrance is sensual or sensory desire, which is craving for pleasure through the 5 senses. If you're consumed by desires, look at what is making you dissatisfied. You may ask yourself, why are you always wanting new things and experiences? Is it unhappiness with your life? Greed? To counter this hindrance, notice how these desires feel in your body and mind without acting on them, and consider the temporary nature of sensory pleasures. Next is anger or ill will. Are you jealous of someone? Are you holding bitterness? Do you carry around anger, or do you have too much pride? To work with anger, direct loving kindness and compassion to the object of your anger and practice empathy and forgiveness to the object of your ill will. And the third hindrance is sloth and torpor, or physical laziness and drowsiness. You ask yourself, what makes you lazy and disinterested? Is it boredom? Are you sick? Are you not understanding what you're supposed to be doing, or are you just not seeing any benefit from what you're doing? Doing light exercise or yoga can stimulate the body and mind and produce a conducive state for meditation. Mindful walking can help with lethargy, and establishing a routine for meditation can help counter any resistance you might have to it. The next is restlessness and worry or anxiety. You can ask yourself, are you stressed? Are you fighting off illness? Are you uneasy at work? Or are you lonely or depressed? Breathing consciously with the whole body or focusing on the ongoing rhythm of breathing in and breathing out can calm anxiety. Being aware of the body through the breath can help with restlessness. And last is skeptical doubt. In order to counter doubt about your practice, it is helpful to gain clarity about the Buddha's teachings by asking questions or maybe having discussions with your teacher. And don't see doubt in a negative light. You can learn from it and reflect on how far you've come in your spiritual journey. When we look back over what might have been the cause of the hindrances, we can wisely avoid those activities in the future. The five aggregates or skandhas are the five fundamental components that make up an individual's mental and physical existence. Form encompasses everything in the physical world as perceived through any of the senses. Feeling refers to feeling tone, as we discussed, how everything is perceived as either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Perception is the sensing and recognition process by which sensory information is received and processed. Mental formations or volitions are the mind's activity, including thoughts, emotions, concept, and choices, which are seen as arising from conditions and are not considered to be permanent or self-existent. Consciousness is the simple quality of being aware of sensory experiences as they happen. Together, the set of aggregates is one way of describing everything that we can know and experience. And since we can cling to anything, both pleasant and unpleasant, the list becomes a useful way of exploring how clinging and attachment cause suffering. The six pairs of base senses are the sensory sphere in which experience unfolds. The eye in visible form, ear and sounds, nose and odors, tongue and taste, body and tactile objects, and the mind and mental objects. We contemplate these experiences in terms of directly noting if any attachment or aversion arises in the encounter of a sense faculty with an object. Pleasurable experiences give us gratification, which can cause suffering when we become attached to them. Unpleasurable experiences cause suffering through aversion, and the Buddha calls the attachments and aversion fetters, and says that we need to see how they arise, how they are abandoned, and how they are permanently eliminated. The seven factors of enlightenment are mindfulness, investigation of phenomena, energy, rapture, tranquility, and concentration. And equanimity. How could I forget that? Mindfulness begins the contemplative process which gives rise to investigation, which gives rise to energy, and so forth. And mindfulness is the constant throughout this process and begins the path to enlightenment by keeping the mind clear and focused. When the seven factors are fully developed, the four noble truths of suffering, cause of suffering, cessation of suffering, and path to the end of suffering are realized. When the mind penetrates the four noble truths, obstacles to enlightenment are eradicated, and suffering is extinguished, fulfilling the Buddha's promise at the beginning of the sutta to fulfill the purification of beings, to overcome suffering and realize nirvana. So in conclusion, we covered a lot in this sutta. It's probably not practical for most of us who meditate 20 minutes or an hour a day to do all of these exercises. When I sit, I always focus on the breath first, according to the Buddhist instruction. And then I try to become mindful of the body by maybe contemplating the four elements of earth, wind, fire, and air within the body. Different parts of this sutta can be applied or used in different situations. Jon Kabat-Zinn said that mindfulness is not one more thing that we have to squeeze into our day as a task with a hoped-for outcome. It's something that helps us to appreciate the present moment, and this is the only moment that we're actually alive in. He says it's easy to talk about mindfulness, but it's really difficult to cultivate even a moment of true mindfulness in our daily lives. So that's why mindfulness is truly a practice, and one that requires discipline and the rigor of meditation.